This is the True Crime Nation podcast with your hosts, Todd and Brian.
If you're enjoying the show
or have suggestions for future shows, you can email us at truecrimenation@outlook.com. And as always, let's start the show. This is the True Crime Nation podcast. I am Brian, and right over there with me is Todd. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, Brian? Ready to talk about some more gore and guts and disgustingness?
Yeah, man. Craziness.
What the hell's wrong with us? Why do we enjoy this stuff anyway? Why do people enjoy this stuff?
I don't know what I think it hits to the heart of our primal urges, you know.
Is it because it's real? I mean, it really happens. You know, you talk about other things, you know, well, it's hearsay, but this stuff really happens and people know it happens. Maybe that's, who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Morbid curiosity, I would guess, probably.
Don't know.
Mm-hmm. Pretty weird.
Talking about morbid, though, tonight we're going to talk about Gary Leon Ridgway, as you know, the Green River Killer.
Green River Killer.
I've heard
again,
about
it. Back to the Pacific Northwest.
Back to the Pacific Northwest, back to the earlier time, not earlier times, but back before, you know, 2000, back when DNA wasn't accessible like it is now.
Actually, probably right about the beginning of the DNA research, because it's the 80s and 90s he was working.
Yeah, I've heard about this guy. I've heard about this story. I know he killed multiple people, multiple women, but I don't really know the details or never really found out really exactly what this guy was about, you know, so I'm kind of, I guess, excited to say that we're going to dig into the story tonight.
We're going to find
out. As gruesome as I'm sure it is. So what do you got on this guy, Gary?
Gary Leon Ridgway, born February 18th, 1949, also known as the Green River Killer. He's an American serial killer. He was initially convicted of 48 separate murders. As part of his plea bargain, another conviction was added, bringing the total convictions to 49, making him the second most prolific serial killer in the United States, according to confirmed murders. He killed many teenage girls and women in the U.S. state of Washington during the 1980s and 90s. So he's pretty recent. I mean, he's...
Yeah, I mean, we grew up in
like
that era.
It's not like the 60s and 70s, so it's pretty recent.
You know, like I said, we grew up in that era, right? We heard about this guy, but never really gave it much thought, as we do as teenagers.
Well, no, because, you know, it happened in Washington. That was back then. That was a world away.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Most of Ridgway's victims were alleged to be sex workers and other women in vulnerable circumstances, including underage runaways. The press gave him his nickname after the first five victims were found on the Green River before his identity was known. He strangled his victims, usually by hand, but sometimes using ligatures. After strangling them, he would dump their bodies in forested and overgrown areas in King County, often returning to the bodies to have sexual intercourse with them.
All right, another Ted Bundy. Here we go.
Yeah.
So before I forget this guy strangled these women with his hands. You know, we've heard about this before. It takes a lot to strangle somebody with your hands, let alone anything
else. It really does.
You have to be committed. Like, you got to give it, like, you got to be at it for a while. It's not just, I'm going to choke you until you pass out and you're done. So this guy was sick in the fact that he did it that way because he must have enjoyed that. I mean, that rush or whatever he was getting out of it, it just tells you how far out people are going to go to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think it's probably a power thing, yeah.
And to do what he's doing to them. I mean,
yeah.
Did they kill this guy? I guess we'll find out. I don't know.
Well, we're going to find out. On November 30th, 2001, as Ridgway was leaving the Kenworth truck factory where he worked in Renton, Washington, he was arrested for the murders of four women whose cases were linked to him through DNA profiling evidence. As part of a plea bargain wherein he agreed to disclose the locations of still missing women, he was spared the death penalty and received a sentence of life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. So,
of course.
Didn't kill him, but he's in prison.
Mm-hmm. So this guy's still alive, as far as we know.
Yeah, just sitting in prison, wasting taxpayers' money.
Yep.
Gary Leon Ridgway was born on February 18th, 1949 in Salt Lake City, Utah. The second of Mary and Thomas Ridgway's three sons. His home life was somewhat troubled. Relatives have described his mother as domineering and have said that while young, he witnessed more than one violent argument between his parents. His father was a bus driver who would often complain about the presence of sex workers. Ridgway had a bedwetting problem until he was 13, and his mother would wash his genitals after every episode. He would later tell defense psychologists that as an adolescent, he had conflicting feelings of anger and sexual attraction toward his mother and fantasized about killing her. Okay. So there you go. I mean...
Nuts. He's nuts. Yeah.
So, but why is... His mom is too. Why is she washing his junk?
It sounds like, yeah, it sounds like...
When he's 13.
Half of his problems came from his upbringing, but that's still no... In my opinion, that's... I don't know. I can't say... Is that really an excuse to do what you do to people, how you were raised?
No. No, it's not.
There's got to be more to it than just that, you know?
Yep. Ridgway is dyslexic and was held back a year in high school. When he was 16, he stabbed a six-year-old boy who survived the attack. Ridgway had led the boy into the woods and then stabbed him through the ribs into his liver. Ridgway's IQ was recorded as being in the low 80s. So, see, He's almost like the opposite of the others because he's
not too bright.
Yeah, Bundy and all those guys, they're like genius level. And then this guy's kind of a moron.
But it kind of is bothersome because, you know, he's blatantly doing these things and then people aren't seeing it. At that point, if I had a relative, a kid, a brother who at 16 led some kid out in the woods and stabbed him, I'd be like, you got to watch this guy. Let's keep him on lockdown. He's going to end up being a serial killer if he's doing this shit at 16. You know, skip the tormenting the animal thing. He's going right to humans.
That's I don't know. That's just weird. Adult life. Ridgway graduated from Tai High School in 1969 and married his 19-year-old high school girlfriend, Claudia Craig. He joined the United States Navy and was sent to Vietnam, where he served on board a supply ship and saw combat. During his time in the military, Ridgway had frequent sexual intercourse with sex workers and contracted gonorrhea. Although angered by this, he continued this activity without protection. The marriage ended within a year. Imagine that.
Okay, so now he's pissed off at the sex workers.
Right, but didn't stop banging them.
Didn't stop, obviously. You know.
No.
So this guy was in Nam, huh? Interesting.
Yeah. And, he grew up with his dad always complaining about the sex workers.
Right.
And then he was in the military, so he started having sex with the sex workers. Got a disease.
Yep.
Mad. He was pissed. But still kept doing it.
His dad was right.
Yep.
So.
When questioned about Ridgway after his arrest, friends and family described him as a friendly but strange. His first two marriages resulted in divorce because of infidelities by both partners. His second wife, Marcia Winslow, claimed that he had placed her in a chokehold. Well, there you go. That's probably how that started.
Uh-huh.
He became religious during his second marriage, proselytizing door-to-door, reading the Bible aloud at work and at home, and insisting that his wife follow the strict teachings of their pastor. Ridgway would also frequently cry after sermons or reading the Bible. Despite his beliefs, Ridgway continued to solicit the services of sex workers and wanted his wife to participate in sex in public and inappropriate places, sometimes even in areas where his victims' bodies were later discovered.
Oh, this guy he's up there. He's at the top as far as
man, he's a
sexual predator type person.
Yeah, you're not kidding. This guy is out there. According to women in his life, Ridgway had an insatiable sexual appetite. His three ex-wives and several ex-girlfriends reported that he demanded sex from them several times a day. Often, he would want to have sex in a public area or in the woods. Ridgway himself admitted to having a fixation with sex workers with whom he had a love-hate relationship. He frequently complained about their presence in his neighborhood, but he also took advantage of their services regularly. In a statement read at his plea hearing, Gary Ridgway said he hated prostitutes and didn't want to pay them for sex. Some have speculated that Ridgway was torn between his lust and his staunch religious beliefs. With his second wife, Marcia, Ridgway had a son, Matthew.
Maybe his dad took advantage of the prostitutes, but used his little coin of hating them to cover up, you know?
That's a possibility. I mean,
and maybe Gary knew this and Gary followed suit.
Yeah, it's a very good possibility. I mean, he was a bus driver, so.
I'm not trying to say what this guy did was okay. I'm just trying to identify why he would do some of these things, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what we got to do. We got to throw out every, you know, scenario, every possibility, every theory, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, I'll just say this.
I mean, we obviously know he did it because he's in prison.
But. I know it's hard for a parent to accept this, but if you've got a kid who is doing these things, manipulating animals or stabbing someone at 16, you've got to understand that there's something very wrong, and they're going to do way, way worse than that if you don't get them under control.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe absolutely. It takes a relative yep. or an aunt or an uncle to identify this, because parents can be that way with their own children, but that's how it happens.
Yeah, but see, back then, though, when he was younger, they just, you know, they usually just ignored that yeah. thing and hope it would go away.
That's what I'm saying. They just ignore it, and that's mm-hmm. what allows it to continue and grow and become
right.
what it becomes.
And then this is what you get. 49 freaking murders.
People die.
At least 49 murders.
Yep. In horrific ways.
Yeah.
Unimaginable ways.
Throughout the 80s and 90s, Ridgway is believed to have murdered at least 71 teenage girls and women near Seattle and Tacoma, Washington. In court statements, Ridgway later reported that he had killed so many that he lost count. The majority of the murders occurred between 82 and 84. The victims were believed to be either sex workers or runaways whom he picked up along the Pacific Highway South. Ridgway sometimes showed the women pictures of his son to trick them into trusting him. They would engage in sexual activity, and after minutes of intercourse from behind, Ridgway would wrap his forearm around the front of their necks and use the other arm to pull back as tightly as he could, strangling them. He killed most victims in his home, his truck, or his secluded area. Most of their bodies were dumped in wooded areas around the Green River, Seattle, Tacoma International Airport, or other dump sites within South King County. There were also two confirmed and another two suspected victims found in the Portland, Oregon area. The bodies were often left in clusters, sometimes posed, usually nude. He would sometimes return to the victims' bodies and have sexual intercourse with them. Ridgway later explained that he did not find necrophilia more sexually satisfying, but having sex with the deceased reduced his need to obtain a living victim and thus limited his exposure to being caught. Because most of the bodies were not discovered until only the skeletons remained, two victims are still unidentified. Ridgway occasionally contaminated the dump sites with gum, cigarettes, and written materials belonging to others, and he even transported a few victims' remains across state lines into Oregon to confuse the police. So, they said his IQ is pretty low, but that's...
He's pretty smart.
Pretty savvy.
Over 70 people. I just don't understand how you can do that and never, ever, someone sees something, someone hears something. Somebody had to have known and never came forward on this case.
Heard or seen something.
There's no way. And to talk about dumping bodies.
Especially if it's around the airport and stuff.
How is that? Yeah, I've been to the airport, but I've never been to Seattle per se. Other than that, I don't know. It sounds like the area around there doesn't seem as congested as maybe we think it is for being a city. But for this guy to kill 70 some people and nothing pop up at that time, you know, he really had to know what he was doing. So he wasn't as dumb as he appeared to be, or he just knew that part of it.
Or he just figured out how to dump them, how to cover it up.
I still say it goes back to a lot of these guys. I'm telling you, a lot of these guys could have been prevented. Or prevented in early times because someone had to have known something. But what I was going to say was talking about the bodies. Yeah. You know the guy who killed the girlfriend down in Florida? He took him there. Was a manhunt for him. I can't remember his name. We should do a show on that too. We talked about it.
Oh, yeah. When they were out driving around in the van across country. And
yeah, Yeah, I had heard that supposedly, like, where they found him, while they were looking for him, they found six other bodies in this area that had been dumped.
Wow. Well, you got it. That was back in the Everglades where they found him, right?
Actually, it was more north. I think it was more north toward Venice, actually.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I was actually told about the area that they found him at. Was very close to there in a park. So that's where they found these six other bodies, just looking for this guy. Wow. Those bodies have been there who knows how long. Well, how'd they get there? Who killed them?
To show you, man. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we just need to be out there more searching areas just because. You know, you could have a serial killer on the loose dumping bodies. You don't even know it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Especially in Florida, in the swamps and in the Pacific Northwest and the vast wilderness out there. And
you know, and you don't find them till you look for them, right?
Yeah, that's true. In the early 1980s, the King County Sheriff's Office formed the Green River Task Force to investigate the murders. Task Force members include Robert Keppel and Dave Reichert, who periodically interviewed incarcerated serial killer Ted Bundy in 1984. Bundy offered his opinions on the psychology, motivations, and behavior of the killer. He suggested that the killer was revisiting the dump sites to have sex with his victims, which turned out to be true. And if police found a fresh grave, they should stake it out and wait for him to come back. Hmm. Also contributing to the investigation was FBI Special Agent John E. Douglas, who developed a profile of the suspect. So they had Bundy helping him with that one.
Yeah. That's weird.
That's, yeah. But
how are you going to find
a fresh... Like I said, he was one of the smart ones. So.
How are you going to find a fresh grave? You know what I mean? I mean, you got to be pretty...
He said if they did.
If they did, yeah.
If they did happen to find one. I mean... Obviously, they were actively looking for him. So. Mm-hmm.
I wonder how close together he was dumping these bodies. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I don't think it's that. Ridgway was arrested in 1982 and 2001 on charges related to prostitution. He became a suspect in the Green River killings in 1983 and 1984. Ridgway passed a polygraph test. On April 7th, 1987, police took hair and saliva samples from Ridgway.
Wow. That's tough to do, to pass a polygraph test. I mean, those things show up, you know, false positives.
You got to be a, and you got to really believe the lies you're telling.
You do, yeah. You would have to.
Yep. Around 1985, Ridgway began dating Judith Mawson, who became his third wife in 1988. Mawson claimed in a 2010 television interview that when she moved into his house while they were dating, there was no carpet. That's weird.
Yeah.
Detectives later told her he had probably wrapped the body in the carpet. In the same interview, she described how he would leave for work early in the morning some days, ostensibly for the overtime pay. So was that his excuse? To get out of there.
Going in early.
Mawson speculated that he must have committed some of the murders while supposedly working these early morning shifts. She claimed that she had not suspected Ridgway's crimes before she was contacted by authorities in 1987 and had not even heard of the Green River Killer before that time because she did not watch the news.
You know, again, it plays into the obliviousness of some people.
Yeah. Yeah, they just don't.
Here it is. What's the chances of the wife of a serial killer not watching the news so she doesn't hear about these things?
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, did he even have a TV in his house?
Maybe not. That's a good point. Yeah. Maybe he kept it that way. You know, maybe they didn't have any kind of TV radio, so to speak. Maybe it was against his religion.
Because if he was that religious, into his religious beliefs, then that's a possibility.
Yeah, I would assume that a serial killer would keep their better halves kind of in the dark, in the quiet, try to keep them away from society a little bit so they don't know so much, you know?
So they don't start thinking for themselves. Mm-hmm. Author Penny Moorhead interviewed Ridgway in prison. He said while he was in the relationship with Mawson, his kill rate went down and that he truly loved her. Of his 49 known victims, only 3 were killed after he married Mawson. Mawson told a local television reporter, "I feel I have saved lives by being his wife and making him happy."
That could be ironically true.
Yeah, yeah, it could be true. I mean, it's weird that she would say that.
Yeah. Well, you got to be weird to be married to a serial killer, period.
That's true.
I mean, if somebody's a serial killer, there's got to be something about them that just isn't right. You know what I'm saying? And people have to see that, especially people who are close to them.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think. The samples collected in 1987 were later subjected to DNA profiling, providing the evidence for his arrest warrant. On November 30th, 2001, Ridgway was at the Kenworth Truck Factory, where he worked as a spray painter. When police arrived to arrest him, Ridgway was arrested on suspicion of murdering 4 women nearly 20 years earlier after being identified as a potential suspect. When DNA evidence conclusively linked semen left on the victims to the saliva swab taken by the police, the 4 victims named in the original indictment were Marcia Chapman, Opal Mills, Cynthia Hines, and Carol Ann Christensen. 3 more victims, Wendy Cofield, Deborah Bonner, and Deborah Estes, were added to the indictment after a forensic scientist identified microscopic spray paint spheres as a specific brand and composition of paint used in the Kenworth factory during the specific time frame when these victims were killed. That shit is amazing to me.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's different than DNA and the fact that that's what they could have been using back then before DNA to match this guy up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Although DNA is the ultimate, obviously.
But look, how long would it take to track down that kind of stuff, though? That's the thing. I mean, how many people... I mean, if it was used exclusively at that factory, that'd be one thing, but...
Right.
Man, that's some work.
Yeah.
That's amazing to me. Plea bargain, confessions, and sentencing. Early in August 2003, Seattle Television News reported that Ridgway had been moved from a maximum security cell at King County Jail to an Airway Heights minimum medium security level tank. Other news reports stated that his lawyers, led by Anthony Savage, were closing a plea bargain that would spare him the death penalty in return for his confessions to a number of Green River murders. So that shouldn't even be a thing.
Yeah. They should tell him that and then you let him do it and then still kill him.
And then be like, ah, just kidding.
Yep. Just like they did their victims.
Yep. On November 5th, 2003, Ridgway entered the guilty plea to 48 charges of aggravated first-degree murder. As part of a plea bargain agreed to in June, that would spare him execution in exchange for his cooperation in locating the remains of his victims and providing other details. In his statement accompanying his plea deal, Ridgway explained that he had killed all of his victims inside King County, Washington, and that he had transported and dumped the remains of the 2 women near Portland to confuse the police. That's quite a drive with dead bodies.
But you know what? You and I, let's say we're detectives and we're following this guy. If a body comes up dumped anywhere within a tri-state area, we're going to assume it's the same person. Why wouldn't we?
You should, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's just trying absolutely. To get us off the path, you know.
Trying to throw him off the scent.
He's running out of room, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how, what's that sick bastard, the clown?
Gacy.
Gacy was caught. He was burying them all in his basement, and then he ran out of room, so he dumped the next victim off a bridge, and they found him. They found the victim, and then that's how they tied him back to him. That's how they caught him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you don't have room for so many bodies.
Right.
Deputy Prosecutor Jeffrey Baird noted in court that the deal contained the names of 41 victims who would not be the subject of State versus Ridgway if it were not for the plea agreement. King County Prosecuting Attorney Norm Malang explained his decision to make the deal. "We could have gone forward with 7 counts, but that is all we could have ever hoped to solve. At the end of that trial, whatever the outcome, there would have been lingering doubts about the rest of these victims. This agreement was the avenue to the truth, and in the end, the search for the truth is still why we have a criminal justice system. Gary Ridgway does not deserve our mercy. He does not deserve to live. The mercy provided by today's resolution is directed not at Ridgway, but toward the families who have suffered so much. They should still kill him.
You know, let me ask you this, though. If you were a bad person and you killed people and you got sentenced, would you want to be sentenced to life in prison, or would you just want to be put to death? I mean,
obviously life in prison.
You would choose that.
You can keep talking.
Yeah, but would it be worth, being locked up for the rest of your life? That's got to be torture, wouldn't you think? Is it worth?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never
been. Well, nobody's going to voluntarily say, yeah, go ahead and kill me.
Yeah, I guess you're right. When it comes down to it, you're not going to choose it.
Right. Obviously. I mean, you got to think at the heart of it. Yeah, and at the heart of it, serial killers are cowards, pretty much.
Yeah, I think so too.
Also, they say it's for the mercy of the families, but I think to put the families out of their suffering, he should be executed. I mean, knowing that he's still alive and living off their dime probably isn't helping.
I think they should be tortured severely. And it should be documented or shown on TV.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. To deter people from killing people, period. And then they should kill them. They should torture them for years on end, and then they should finally kill them.
Yep. I agree.
And they should, do the electric chair. They shouldn't do this. And nowadays, they just injected them and they fall asleep. I don't even think they feel any pain.
I think there is pain.
There is. I was reading about
that first injection is so they can't move.
I thought that there was a cross.
But I've heard that it's pretty painful. Well, it used to be. I don't know. They've changed it.
Yeah. I was reading about the latest execution of a transgender prisoner. I don't know if you saw that or not. I can't remember the guy's name or her name. But it just talked about how they're going to inject with, I can't remember the name of it. But I read about it. It's actually used as a sedative in operations. So I'm thinking, do they just give them too much and they don't wake up and never feel any pain? Is that what they're doing nowadays? Because it would be inhumane?
Yes, I think that's why they changed it.
Okay. So these guys aren't even feeling any pain. They're just passing out and they don't wake up.
Mm-hmm. They should bring back the gas chamber.
They should bring back the electric chair.
Because gas chamber is pain. Because you're breathing in cyanide gas.
Or just burn them at the stake. That'd be the worst.
I think you'd bring back the hanging on the courtyard lawn, man.
Burn them alive. Just that set too. Up
the gallows and fucking hang them right there.
So set them on fire and then hang them. You don't want me as a judge.
You sure you're not a serial killer?
You don't want me as a judge. I'm just saying.
Right. The hanging judge, that's what they call you.
The burner.
The flaming hanging judge.
That's right. The flaming didn't sound judge. Right, but yeah.
No, that didn't sound right.
Anyway,
on December 18th, 2003, King County Superior Court Judge Richard Jones sentenced Ridgway to 48 life sentences without the possibility of parole to be served consecutively. He was also sentenced to an additional 10 years for tampering with evidence for each of the 48 victims, adding 480 years to his 48 life sentences. Later given another life sentence after the remains of his 49th victim were found.
I don't mean to keep going off subject here, but why do they even do serve consecutively? A life sentence is a life sentence. You go till you're dead.
Well, technically, a life sentence is only like 48 years or something.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah.
I got it. That's stupid.
It's not a long time.
That's dumb.
So that's what they do.
Okay.
Consecutive.
Just to make sure.
Yeah.
It almost makes me feel like somebody got out because
ever getting out.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, if they survive the first life sentence, I mean, they'd have to be pretty young.
Yeah, and they'd be too old to do anything once they got out, really.
Right. Right. And I mean, it's prison. What are the chances that they're going to survive?
True. True.
Ridgway led prosecutors to three bodies in 2003 on August 16th of that year. The remains of a 16-year-old girl found near Enumclaw, Washington, 40 feet from State Route 410, were pronounced as belonging to Pammy Annette Avent, who had been believed to be a victim of the Green River Killer. The remains of Marie Malvar and April Buttram were found in September 2003. On November 23, 2005, the Associated Press reported that a weekend hiker found the skull of one of the 48 women Ridgway admitted murdering in his 2003 plea bargain with King County prosecutors. The skull of another victim, Tracy Winston, who was 19 when she disappeared from Northgate Mall on September 12, 1983, was found on November 20, 2005 by a man hiking in a wooded area near Highway 18 near Issaquah, southeast of Seattle. This was the find which led to Ridgway's 49th life sentence.
So she was there for, holy shit, a long time. And some guy hiking just happened to find her.
Yeah. Or just like, hey, look at that. That looks like a skull.
Yeah.
Ridgway confessed to more confirmed murders than any other American serial killer over a period of 5 months of police and prosecutor interviews. He confessed to 48 murders, 42 of which were on the police list of probable Green River Killer victims. On February 9, 2004, county prosecutors began to release the videotaped records of Ridgway's confessions. In one taped interview, he initially told investigators that he was responsible for the deaths of 65 women. In another taped interview with Reichert in December 31, 2003, Ridgway claimed to have murdered 71 victims and confessed to having had sex with them before killing them, a detail which he did not reveal until after his sentencing. In his confession, he acknowledged that he targeted prostitutes because they were easy to pick up and that he hated most of them. He confessed that he had sex with his victims' bodies after he murdered them, but claimed he began burying the victims so that he could resist the urge to commit necrophilia. Ridgway later said that murdering young women was his career. Don't pay very much.
No. Doesn't have very good benefits either.
No. Well, it does now because he's living off.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It does, doesn't it? Jesus.
Yeah.
You know.
It does now because he's getting health care. He's getting food and board. Ridgway was placed in solitary confinement at Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla in January 2004. On May 14th, 2015, he was transferred to the USP Florence High, a high-security federal prison east of Cannon City, Colorado. In September 2015, after a public outcry and discussion with Governor Jay Inslee, Corrections Secretary Bernie Warner announced that Ridgway would be transferred back to Washington to be easily accessible to open murder investigations. Ridgway was returned by charter plane to Washington State Penitentiary in Walla Walla from USP Florence High on October 24th, 2015. I just like saying Walla Walla.
Walla Walla, Washington. We've both been there, haven't we?
I love Walla Walla. It's a great town.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. Some great breweries there. Victims. Before Ridgway's confession, authorities had attributed 49 murders to the Green River Killer. Ridgway confessed to murdering at least 71 victims. Ridgway's victims were not women of any specific race or ethnicity. Rather, they were all financially poor, younger women and girls between the ages of 14 and 26, except for three, whom he found in vulnerable circumstances, often working as prostitutes or having run away from home. At the time of Ridgway's December 18, 2003 sentencing, authorities had been able to find at least 48 sets of remains, including victims not originally attributed to the Green River Killer. Ridgway was sentenced for the deaths of each of these 48 victims, with a plea agreement that he would plead guilty to any and all future cases in King County, where his confessions would be corroborated by reliable evidence. Huh. So basically, if they can trace back anybody they find anytime, if they can prove that it was an older murder and trace it back to him somehow, he has to confess to it.
And that's why he's alive.
Yep.
Because they're not going to believe him if he tells them every single one. He probably can't remember every single one.
Right.
Something about,
you never know.
There's something about that Pacific Northwest. We keep saying that. In that Seattle area alone, you know, they talk about people being depressed and the murder and suicide rates so high up there. And just the state of Washington alone has weirdness going on.
I know. I don't know.
Do you think that
it's beautiful? It's so beautiful out there. I don't understand.
It's amazingly beautiful. Do you think if this guy would have had a different life upbringing, say maybe like yours or mine, he would have been not a serial killer? Or do you think it's just some people are that way?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Maybe. I doubt it.
Some people think that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's some kind of chemical imbalance in their brain or something. I don't know. It's just weird. Some people, you know, have that nurture and nature argument, you know, is it your upbringing or is it just the world that turned you that way? You know, I don't know.
I don't either. And I wonder, like I said, if it's from birth, if it's something you can't necessarily control, I get it maybe in a way. I don't get it, but you know what I'm saying.
Right.
Listeners, we appreciate it. If you've got any comments about this episode or have episodes you want us to do a show on, reach out to us. Where can they get a hold of us, Brian?
TrueCrimeNation@outlook.com is our email. You can get us on Facebook. You can get us on Instagram. You can get us on Twitter. You can get us anywhere.
We're out there. Find us, True Crime Nation.
There's social media. We're on it.
Reach out to us and let us know. We appreciate you listening. Brian, appreciate your time tonight.
Yeah, man. Always fun. Always learning from these things, man. That was crazy.
Thanks for being here. And listeners, remember,
monsters are real.